All right. Thanks for tuning in to 96.3 FM Ohm Radio in Charleston, South Carolina. I'm Whitney Powers, and I'm your host today for the series Small Talks, Big Ideas, a weekly 30-minute show that is a collaborative space shared by four of our community's advocacy organizations, including Low Country Local First, the Coastal Conservation League, Charleston Moves, and If You Were Mayor. Today's segment welcomes If You Were Mayor to the studio, and we've invited Harry Lassine, Executive Director of the Charleston Parks Conservancy, to discuss some of the Conservancy's role in improvements to parks around the city, including the addition of community gardens in some, and also to think a little bit about, outside of the box, about Charleston's future. The Charleston Parks Conservancy, I know, works hand in hand with the city of Charleston, and that's kind of like another organization that I'm familiar with, the South Carolina Community Loan Fund, which actually originated in the mayor's office. And you may know of others, and I hope that you will feel free to share those, because I think in the past we've seen the city actually originate or become or partner with some entities to actually sort of establish a private or nonprofit sort of element that can work that can advocate sort of independent of the city for issues that the city sort of seems or deems to be very important. And so the Parks Conservancy really has been instrumental in work to, especially, I guess your showpiece right now is the Colonial Lake in downtown Charleston. That's underway, but you've actually finished some things. So, so maybe you want to give us a little overview of the Parks Conservancy. And then we'll come back to the fact that the mayor's race, we just had a mayor's race. But so we just had the sort of runoff, and we know who the next mayor is going to be. But go ahead and give us a little overview of the Parks Conservancy and sort of how your mission sort of extends, not just on the peninsula, but obviously throughout the city region.
Sure. Thanks, Whitney. First start off by saying thank you for having me and for this great opportunity to talk to you about what the Parks Conservancy does and about this great city and how we all can contribute to making this a better, more livable, even better place. We all love Charleston. That's why we're here. The Charleston Parks Conservancy is a private nonprofit organization that works hand in hand with, as you said, the city, but also with neighborhoods, neighbors, communities, individuals, organizations, to make improvements to parks and public spaces. So that's sort of how we do it. But the what we do is we're trying to create a better city and a better community. And our belief, very strongly held belief, is that parks and public spaces are the spaces and the places where our community gets created. That's where the dialogue happens, and that's where we meet our neighbors and discuss. It's the civic square, sort of writ large, and we really believe that a high quality, well cared for public sphere, public realm that people care about and feel invested in is a very, very important part of making our city an even better place to live. So that's what we do. We bring people together. We're a catalyst. We bring people together with the government, the city government, and we bring the neighborhoods and individuals and organizations together to make good things happen in our public spaces. So how does this happen? Well, we were founded back in 2007. You mentioned that we work with the city, but actually the impetus for the Parks Conservancy may be a little different than the Community Loan Fund or the Digital Corridor Foundation or some of these others. Ours actually came from a private individual, Darla Moore, who many of you know as a sort of a well-known philanthropist in South Carolina for her work at the University of South Carolina and up in Lake City in Florence County. She has a home here and spends a good deal of time in Charleston. And she noticed that, what attracted her to buy a home here was the beauty of the private realm, the beautiful homes and beautiful gardens. And she invested a great deal of her time and resources into creating a beautiful garden at her home. She's a very dedicated horticulturalist and gardener, loves and interested in farming, and has a beautiful botanical garden up in Lake City. But as she walked around town, she noticed that the public spaces, we're not the level of same level of quality as some of the private spaces. And she said, you know, I want to fix that. She and her husband, Richard Rainwater, decided to establish an organization modeled on some of the similar kinds of organizations that are in New York, where they've also got a home and spend a lot of time. But private organizations that work in partnership with the public entities and bring the resources of the private sector and the energy of the private sector from neighborhood associations and neighborhood organizations and just individuals who say, I want to make a difference in my community and I want to do it in my park. And so they created this entity. The city embraced it. Mayor Riley particularly saw the power of this idea. We're talking about big ideas. Well, this is a big idea.
Right.
It's a big idea to bring private resources and work closely with the public entity, the government, to make things happen. And so we bring these private resources. We bring the energy of citizens to bear on public spaces, and magic happens. Really, it's a special thing to watch happen, and you see it all over town. If you've seen the transformation of Allen Park and Hampton Park Terrace, or Magnolia Community Garden over at the corner of Magnolia and Sycamore West Ashley, we're working now in parks all over the city, and I can talk more about that. But how this all happens.
I just had an encounter with a park that. In Elliottboro,
yes,
which was a sort of it's like a true gym. I mean, it's got community gardens, it's got a playground, and I noticed y'all's logo there along with is it the Alcoa Foundation,
yes,
or something who were instrumental in sort of bringing that money or bringing those resources. So did that come about through an initiative?
Right out of the neighborhood.
That's
that
cool.
This actually occurred before the Parks Conservancy was even on the scene.
Right.
A group of neighbors, led by a woman named Claire Exodus, who you may know. Claire was really interested in creating more park space in Elliottboro, Cannonboro. And really the only available public space was the old city garage there.
Right.
And so working with that neighborhood association and working with a group of really committed citizens, they created a playground. They actually built the playground themselves with the city parks department's help and created a community garden. And this all happened actually before the Parks Conservancy even came along. So it's a really cool story. They, creating these things is a big challenge, and that's one thing. But actually maintaining them and managing them over the long term is also a challenge. And so the Parks Conservancy was asked to come in, and actually now we manage the community garden. That was our very first community garden that we agreed to manage for them. So we've got a full-time staff person who works in Elliottboro, Cannonboro Community Garden, but also works in our very large community garden west of the Ashley. And we're in the middle of and have just planted our first plants in our newest community garden on James Island.
Oh, how great.
Really happy about
those. The Parks Conservancy offers some continuity in neighborhoods, for instance, where you maybe have something that's been developed by the largesse of two or three people, and something happens that sort of, when they go, sometimes these things kind of go fallow.
Project was a little unique because we had just started and we had just come on the scene. Now we sort of take the role of helping be the convener.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, for that particular community garden, the city was the convener to help bring the resources together. But now we can do that,
right.
And the city can focus on what it does really well, which is help manage the construction processes and do the contracting and so forth. While we can focus on what we do well, which is to bring people together. Go out and solicit donations. And then once a project is completed, the most important work happens, and that is continuing to maintain it, continuing to make it a space that people want to enjoy for not just this year, but year after year after year. And the way we do that is by bringing together volunteers, park angels, we call them.
Right.
And our park angels are out there with us in those parks on a weekly basis, pruning, cleaning, mulching, whatever needs to be done, our park angels are out there with our staff making these things happen.
Oh, that's very, very cool. Well, we're going to come back to some of those things, and but before, while the topic is a hot one, because we're actually taping on, what is this, Thursday after Tuesday's runoff election. So we know who the next mayor is going to be. The mayor-elect is John Tecklenburg. He's obviously, after 40 years of Joe Riley, going to be something of a change. And so we really ask people to be engaged. And we think that that's a very important part of the mission of If You Were Mayor. And one of the reasons why you have you here is to sort of establish that sort of engagement. In the case of the parks, it's your volunteers. But I have to say, I do know you're going to share with us a little more insight into the sort of mayor, the secrets of the mayor's office, a little bit later in this broadcast. So, but I didn't want to leave the sort of introductory period without sort of touching on that. So, so you do bring personally a good bit of experience that relates to sort of. Of you're politically aware, you work in a realm in which you sort of connect people who have vision with some realities, and I think that that's really an interesting skill set. It's one that I would love to think that more people possessed. And but of course, then you might not have a job. And But I, for instance, I mean, I know that one of the first projects that y'all instigated was, in fact, Colonial Lake, and that was a really big project coming in the door, and I'm sure it was meant to make a big splash right off the bat. I know there was a lot of discussion about that, and it's in my neighbor. I live pretty close to there. And one thing I will say about it is it's been a great equalizer. I mean, it's when in the past, I know walking around that park, you would certainly see people from all walks of life, every race, every sort of social strata. And they were using the tennis courts, or they were playing on the ball fields. They were fishing in the sort of inlet there. Mm-hmm. And then they were just walking for exercise. You really saw a lot of that, or just lounging and doing some people walking. And so that great equalizer, I don't know whether I'd venture to say that maybe its size kind of meant that people sort of felt they were near other people, but also far enough away that they didn't feel kind of invaded. I think sometimes that's how big parks, that's one of the advantage of the big park versus right. a pocket park. And you need those in cities, I think, because sometimes that's what cities are all about. But I also wonder if some of the roughness around the edge made it a little less intimidating. And and I hope that some of that, I wouldn't say necessarily rough around the edges, but I hope that we continue to see that kind of that status as a sort of great equalizer.
Sure, sure.
To remain.
Well, you know, one of the things that we like to talk about when we talk about public spaces, about parks, about public realm, is they belong to everybody. They belong to all citizens of our city. And actually, they belong to our visitors, too, because we want them to visit our parks and public spaces, too. They're not just for us. We don't charge an admission to city parks. Maybe some of the other park agencies do, and they have reasons for doing that. But our parks are free. And so no matter where they are from or where you are from, you're welcome in a city park. And when we can make those very high quality, it makes people want to use them. It makes people want to come back because they feel like, okay, this is my space, and it's really special. It's really nice. Colonial Lake's a great example. There are lots of them around this great city because we have so many beautiful parks. But Colonial Lake, it starts with the lake, right? It's a beautiful lake. It's a saltwater lake that evolved over time as the city grew up around it, and the city in the 1880s decided to set that aside as a public common, as a park. And they built the seawall around it. It's still fed from the Ashley River through a pipe under Ashley Avenue. And so it's a saltwater lake, and there are saltwater fish in there. And as you mentioned, a lot of times you'll see folks down there fishing in the lake. which is great, and we want to keep that, make sure that happens. And one of the great things that we're trying to do with the Colonial Lake Project is improve the water quality there.
Yeah, I would say I might not have wanted to eat something out of
yeah,
there.
Nor would I. But we hope that, and one of the intents is that the water flow will be improved, so we'll have better water quality, and then the condition of the seawall that was at the water's edge. Was, you know, it hadn't really been renovated since the 1880s. So, you know, 100 and however many years that is, 135 years, it hadn't been renovated. And we got in there, and it was really interesting because these walls were created with tabby, which is an oyster shell sand mix. There's some alchemy that happens with chemical reactions when that is heated, and it turns
gold into
lime.
Oh no!
I wish it was lime. I wish it was gold. But the interesting thing is people don't use tabby in construction anymore.
Right.
And in order to renovate that, about 40 or 50 years ago, they thought you could just slap some cement on top of it and it would look nice and that would be great. Well, actually, it didn't work at all. The Portland cement didn't adhere to the tabby, and when it fell off, it pulled the tabby off with it.
Right.
And so it was actually more destructive than if they had just left the tabby alone. So we went in there, and because people don't use tabby anymore, we had to figure out with the construction contractor and a set of engineers and some consultants from Scotland, we had to actually figure out how to rebuild this thing using the old technology that they used back in the 19th and 17th centuries to build buildings around Charleston. So it was a really interesting process, which has been well documented now, because we want to make sure that when in another 75 or 100 years when they have
right.
to come back in and do repairs, they'll know exactly how to do it. We had to import the oyster shells from Georgia and from Louisiana, because South Carolina has a law that says you can't you have to recycle oyster
yep.
shells, which we support, by the way. But anyway, so very interesting process. We're going to rebuild that seawall. It's almost the repairs to that are almost done, and the tabby will be beautiful, and you'll be able to see it when you walk around the edge of the lake. The edge of the lake will actually be really, really beautiful, because we've replaced the old sort of plain old concrete edge and with a very beautiful granite coping stone that goes all the way around the lake. So it'll really define the edge of the lake. We've got new pathways, new sidewalks that will all set the stage for what we're most excited about at the Parks Conservancy, and that is a series of new gardens that will ring the lake and really make this inviting, beautiful place. Colonial Lake was beautiful to begin with. Let's just all agree that it was a spectacular
right.
place, and that's why so many people used it. But we think once it's done, even more people will come to use it, because it will be even more beautiful than it was before. So we're really excited about that, and those are the kinds of things that we like to do all over the city. And I get excited about this because I love talking about parks. But we've got great projects like this that have really great stories all around the city. We're in about 25 parks now. And each one of them has a great story.
Well, and I'm hoping that when people hear this, that those people that feel like their park is underrepresented by their, that they'll give you a call. Because
yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Obviously.
I've got some more I'd love to tell you about.
Well, that kind of comes about round, and we've touched on this a little bit, because I'm sure that a park like Colonial Lake, and I've seen, you know, the volunteers at Marion Square, and I've seen the volunteers in the park opposite Memminger Auditorium, for instance. And so it seems like you have a ready brigade of those volunteers for the.
And
some
we're
of these.
Always welcoming more people.
Very
Let me
good.
Say that.
Well, and I guess, you know, the high profile parks and those that are sort of serve the larger city certainly seem to get a lot of attention. But what about the parks that are maybe in marginal,
sure.
you know, the somewhat more marginal areas? And how do you engage the people that are right there as well as, you know, your kind of constant brigade?
Sure, sure. So the way I would like to define this question is to say, we're not just working downtown. You know, right. We're not just working south of Calhoun Street. We got some parks down there. We do work in Cannon Park and Colonial Lake and Logan Street and Hazel Park and Playground. But what about other areas of the city?
Right, right.
And everybody's neighborhood park is special to them. So wherever it is, they would like it to be better. Start with Allen Park, which is a small square along Ashley Avenue in Hampton Park Terrace, just south of Hampton Park. Working with the neighborhood there, we've completely transformed that park. It was barren. It had a beautiful fountain from years ago in the middle that the city had continued to maintain. But other than that, it was pretty much surrounded by a sea of dirt. And if you go there now, it's a spectacular garden. And we did that with the help of the neighborhood, the Hampton Park Terrace neighborhoods, specifically some neighbors around it like Marshall Walker and others who really worked with us to create a beautiful space. Just north of Hampton Park, Corinne Jones Park is in Wagner Terrace. The same thing happened. A group of neighbors, Kevin Conlin and a group of people who live right around Corinne Jones Park, really, you know, that started because of moms taking kids to the playgrounds, mm-hmm. and dads taking their kids to playgrounds and realizing, you know, this playground is okay, and we're glad we have it in our neighborhood, but boy, couldn't it be a lot nicer?
Right.
They found out about us, and we came in and worked with them. We created a plan. We've got a beautiful new playground there surrounded by a garden. We worked with Clemson University in the architecture program there to build a shade structure, which is right alongside the tennis court there. The soccer field and the tennis court and the basketball court that were there are still there, and everybody can continue to use them, but there's also a garden space that's wonderful. Those are some that are completed in some of the smaller parks in the neighborhoods around. We're working on some others that are real exciting. We're working on the Shaw Center on Mary Street. It's a community center in the East Side neighborhood.
Great.
We are working with the staff there and the neighbors and the folks that use the community center to create some beautiful courtyard spaces there. We started in there about 2 years ago and have continued to work to improve those spaces. Shaw Center is a great community center for that part of the city with a lot of great things going on in addition to what the Parks Conservancy does there. But our biggest project right now, Colonial Lake is kind of under construction. The city's managing that. But the biggest project that we're working on as an organization right now is a renovation of the park surrounding the St. Julian Divine Community Center, which is the major community center on the east side of Charleston. And many people pass by and have passed by the St. Julian Divine Center many, many times and don't even know it's there because the park space doesn't read like a park when you pass it. St. Julian Divine Community Center is just north of the cigar factory. So the two big smokestacks that you can see from all over town, that is the old city incinerator.
Okay.
And the smokestacks are a remnant from that when it was the incinerator back 75 years ago. The city maintained that old industrial building, which is a beautiful building, in the 1970s, created a community center there. It's the major community center for the east side. It's got a beautiful, if you've never been to the third floor of the St. Julian Divine Center, you need to go up there. The view is spectacular of the Cooper River Bridge. You can see over the Columbus Street Port Terminal over to the bridge. It's got these gigantic windows. You have the smokestacks behind you. It's a really stunning space. But the park that surrounds this community center is a little forlorn. It's a little threadbare. It's not what it could be. And we really want to take this space, which is at the gateway. You know, it's if you're heading north on East Bay, that's kind of the last of the historic fabric of the city. And once you get north of the old Cooper River Bridge right of way, you get to the public housing, and then you get to the area north of that where so many of our tech businesses and a lot of other interesting things are happening. That's the part of town actually where our offices are. So we're really interested in that part of town too. But the St. Julian Divine Center is along that north-south gateway. If you commute from east of the Cooper downtown, you pass by it every day on East Bay Street. But it's also an east-west gateway. It's at the foot of the bridge, right as you get on the bike and pedestrian bridge.
Right.
It's the first building at the foot of the bridge. And as we develop bike and pedestrian infrastructure throughout our city, that will be the east-west corridor along the old bridge right-of-way will be the east-west corridor. And so that park that sits in that one spot So it's at a north-south gateway. It's an east-west gateway. We are anticipating lots of new housing, affordable housing, we hope, to be in the old Cooper River Bridge right-of-way that's available there. So the community center is going to be at the heart of a really fast-changing part of our city. We know that the east side is changing. We know the cigar factory has just come on board, come online. There are more things in the works for the bridge right-of-way. There are lots of exciting things happening at Trident Tech at the Palmer campus. The Philip Simmons Foundation is just a block or so away from the community center, and we're working with the Philip Simmons Foundation to do some programming in the park with kids doing ironwork and so forth. So it's really exciting what we want to do there, and we want to transform that public space into something that the community will have a great asset to help. As I said at the very beginning, this is all about helping build a stronger community and building communities where the communities could be stronger. And so whether that's south of Calhoun Street or on the east side or west of the Ashley, and I can talk about our parks over there if you like, we're trying to bring this, the gospel of public spaces and the importance of them to our community, to all parts of our city.
Well, and it sounds like you kind of walk a fine line between the sort of making sure that you engage the people in their own neighborhoods now, and that sort of tendency for people to read it as a sort of a signal of gentrification. So you're obviously really having to kind of keep your eye on the ball, because obviously if these things kind of correspond with you know, a burst of gentrification, then it really sort of seems like your mission is sort of, upended. So I'm sure,
right,
I'm sure that's
right,
a real fine line. I participated recently in, or went to one of the events at Trident Tech's East Side Celebration. I guess they have a week long
East Side
Celebration.
Yeah.
And, it was really great to see those photographs that were put up on the fence that were the people who lived in the East Side neighborhood.
Right.
They were just stunning. And and I know that that's really, that kind of brings up the sort of point of collaboration, because I know that your organization really does reach out to other organizations. And it was certainly something that if you were mayor wanted to be part of, is making sure that we connected dots between organizations. And I think you're sort of already doing that in some places. I think you mentioned West Ashley. I do want to come back to West Ashley and James Island, because I know that I don't want to give them the short shrift, because
everybody
seems to have given them the short shrift, and we don't want to be accused of that. So why don't you, maybe give us a little bit of discussion about some of these. And I know we've talked a little bit about something, and whether you want to make that a public, make it known to the public, that'd be great. But some collaborations with other organizations that you've been part of.
Well, what I want to get this one in real quick, because we've talked about working with neighborhoods and individuals. I want to talk a little bit about working with businesses.
Oh, cool.
We talked a little bit about some of the quieter, less visible things that the Parks Conservancy has worked on. One of the things we really want to help do is we're all about giving people more reasons to come use public space. And as we know, in 2015, one of the things that everybody wants to do is be connected digitally, be connected to their neighbors and to the community and to the larger world. And so we're trying to do the best we can to bring free Wi-Fi to our parks. And we've partnered with the Digital Corridor Foundation and some of the tech businesses that are involved in the Digital Corridor in Charleston to bring Wi-Fi. We currently have free Wi-Fi available in Hampton Park. We have it available in Magnolia Community Garden, west of the Ashley. It's available at Mitchell Playground in the West Side neighborhood, right along Rutledge Avenue. It is available in Corinne Jones Park and Wagner Terrace. And we're just about to go live with it in Harmon Field, which is over on the edge of the Gadsden Green community near Burke High School. at Harmon Field, which the soccer fields and a great
right.
great new community center there that was built with the help of American Recovery Act back in around 2010, the Arthur Christopher Community
right.
Center. So working all over the city. So that's one of the ways we partner with people. We do lots of partnerships, and really again, as I started with, that's really what the value that we can bring is being a catalyst, being a convener of different interested groups, whether they're individuals, neighborhood associations, churches, businesses. That's how we make things happen in our communities, bringing people together, focusing on a common goal, and then being involved for the long term, not just for the one-off project here or there, but saying when the Charleston Parks Conservancy makes an investment in your community of our resources and our time, we're going to be there not just today and not just next week when we install the playground, but we're going to be there next year and the year after. Just talk to the folks over at Allen Park or talk to the people in the neighborhoods. Our very first project was at the South Windermere Shopping Center, Windermere Community Garden.
Oh, right.
Right there in front of Earth Fair and along Windermere Boulevard, all the way down to the Horticulture Society's offices and the mm-hmm. library there. We're still there. We have
right.
park angels out there. Our aqua angels, who are those volunteers who help us water in the summertime and make sure that those plants are looking good. We found, even though all these parks and gardens have automatic irrigation, the plants do much better if they get the tender, loving care of a person who actually cares enough to come out, stand there with a hose, and water the plants. And they look great, and we have a whole core of volunteers who help us do that throughout the summer. And that's another reason why our parks look so great. So that we're still there. We're still at South Windermere working with the Horticulture Society and other groups that help us maintain those. And we have groups coming in all the time to work at Marion Square, to work at Allen Park, to work at the Chapel Street Fountain, to work over in Tiedemann Park, all over the city. It's really fantastic. So now I want to get to your question about West Ashley and James
yes.
Island. So much of our city, the population actually lives over either in West Ashley or James Island. In fact, I live on James Island myself and spent many years living west of the Ashley, so I know that part of the city really well. One of the parks that we're most proud of and we feel really responsible for is the Magnolia Park and Community Garden, which is at the corner of Magnolia and Sycamore. If you pass the Avondale area on Magnolia, you go down about a quarter mile, it's on your right. You can come in from the Sycamore side right off of 61 as well. But we actually helped create that park with the partnership. Again, another partnership. We partnered with, at that time, the East Cooper Land Trust was looking for a project, and we brought them this piece of property and said, will you help us acquire this land?
The East Cooper?
East Cooper Land Trust,
huh.
Yeah. We couldn't get anybody else to help us acquire the land because we were a brand-new organization.
Right.
And they were generous enough to say, yeah, we'll help you out. This was a piece of property, again, at that corner. Used to be the old Albemarle Elementary School years and years ago. Mm-hmm. School district closed the school, sold the land to a private entity, and it was slated for development, the open space was. And the neighborhood didn't like that. It was going to be lots of apartment buildings. And the neighborhood said, you know, we like this as green space. We want it to stay that way. So working with the East Cooper Land Trust, we put about $40,000 of our own money into the project. We were able to get a Charleston County Greenbelt grant, which was funded by your half-cent sales tax.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Kudos to the county and to all those voters who helped approve the half-cent sales tax. We were able to acquire that land. We held it and created a master plan for it, put a conservation easement on the land, so it will be green space forever. And then we donated it to the city of Charleston. So we actually acquired this land, gave it to the city. It's now a city park. And on it is the first phase of a long-term project we have for this entire space. But the most important thing we've put there is the spectacularly beautiful Magnolia Community Garden. And you have to go out and see it if you haven't seen it.
Oh, I'm excited.
It's a community vegetable garden. We've got 60 8x12 box, 6x12 boxes that anybody can raised bed planters that anybody can rent. We actually have a waiting list now. We installed 40 to begin with. The demand was so great, we added 20 more. It's really big. You can grow anything you want in there that's legal, and it's fantastic. And folks are in there. We have a cross section of people, young, old, young families, older folks, grandparents, black, white. It is the coolest space you've seen.
Oh, that's sweet.
And that's a really interesting point in our city. Corner of Magnolia Sycamore, because it really touches and is close to so many different neighborhoods. We reach over to the Ashleyville, Maryville community. You
right.
got East Oak and West Oak Forest. You got Washington Park. Then you've got the Magnolia neighborhood, the Avondale neighborhood. You've got a lot of folks in that area, and that's a little bit older part of our city. So there's mature trees, and people can't garden really well in their backyards because they don't have a lot of sun.
Right.
This is a sunny, beautiful place. I mentioned earlier the Clemson architecture program. We worked with Clemson and the students there to create a garden pavilion, which is where we teach our gardening classes, which we have there on a regular basis. There's a tool storage, there's a bin for washing your vegetables, and it's really an incredible space, and it was done in partnership with the city, with a bunch of the businesses from the Avondale area, the restaurants, and I'd like to thank Ed Kronsberg for helping marshal the people there and get them focused on helping us. That was a really great effort, putting that community together to build that community garden. Now we're doing the same thing in Medway Park on James Island in the Riverland Terrace neighborhood, using that Maybank corridor of the folks who live there and commute through there and work along there to help create a similar community garden, 60 lease beds. And then the coolest thing we have in these community gardens is not only do we have spaces for individuals to lease beds and grow their own food and vegetables and so forth, but we also have community beds that are twice as big. And any gardener who leases a bed is also required to help us tend the community beds. In Magnolia, we have 12 community beds. Last year, we grew enough food, fresh food, vegetables, to donate almost 1,200 pounds of produce to the Low Country Food Bank.
Oh, my gosh.
That was grown right in the heart of West Ashley. And it's fresh, healthy, great food, and so that's another way we partner with. We also give the food bank and 180 Place, mm-hmm. which I'm still learning that it's not Crisis Ministries
right.
anymore, but 180 Place also is a recipient of our food, and so we're really excited about that and excited about it on James Island. I want to talk about that, and I know I'm
that's okay.
hogging
You're
the
still
time,
excited.
But this new community garden on James Island is really exciting. I would encourage everybody to go out there and check it out. It's in the old Medway Park, which is also a former school site, just like Magnolia.
Yeah.
And the school district still actually owns that property and leases it to the city. And the city, in turn, allows us to garden there. We're in the middle of the construction process right now. We've just recently put in, with the help of a bunch of volunteers from a number of different groups, we've put in the raised bed planters. We've filled them with soil. We're about to put in hardscape and a beautiful fence. And then next fall, we're working again with Clemson and David Pastry and Ray Huff and all the folks over at the Clemson Architecture Program here to build another garden pavilion, which we hope can be even bigger and better than the one we have at Magnolia, which will be a home for the gardeners. It'll be a place we can have classes, but it'll also be an asset for the neighborhood, the Riverland Terrace neighborhood, and it'll be a place that they can have events in the park. So it's really,
sweet.
Really exciting for that part of James Island. Again, I live on James Island, so I'm excited about getting involved in a park there. There's not a lot of park space on James Island, so making the park space that we have really nice is something that we're excited about over the long term. And I could talk all afternoon. So.
I'm sure you could at this rate. We will be. But I just wanted to touch on something because at the TEDx conference a couple of years ago, they show some films kind of in the interim spaces, and one of them was a fellow named Ron Finley. You may have seen this film.
I have.
And I would encourage anybody who's listening to sort of give it a look, because
it's pretty
entertaining.
And we're working on getting a screening of it shown in Charleston. So.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Well, so he's really a premier guerrilla gardener, and in South Central L.A. And when they showed it there, he's a very compelling figure. And but I did notice that the entire audience here in Charleston was pretty turned on by what he had to say about using curb space for growing vegetables and sort of any derelict space becoming a productive, I guess, is really the best word. And I know that Charlie Smith, during a presentation on issues that we had for the mayoral candidates in the spring, was pretty vocal about how West Ashley had an awful lot of sidewalk and curb space that was really pretty grim. Plus, we have a lot of places in James Island and so forth that don't even have sidewalks. So,
right.
So that's an issue.
Yeah, that's an issue that has a long history of whether it was incorporated or not incorporated, and
right.
That's a whole other ball of wax.
Well, and this may be this kind of guerrilla gardening or the sort of taking on those kind of spaces may be, in fact, a little counter to your mission. And you may not even be able to advocate guerrilla gardening per se, but are there some creative ways to spur some of these kinds of efforts?
Sure.
That might not really be parks per
sure.
se?
Well, let me go back to what I've been talking about bringing people together. And the Charleston Parks Conservancy is not the only entity in our city that's interested in these kinds of things. We've got groups like Charleston Trees that work hard to plant trees in the public realm.
Right.
We also have Mayor Riley's 10,000 Trees Initiative that has worked hard to bring trees all over our city. And they're actually working hard on Savannah Highway about planting planting trees in the public realm in Savannah, along Savannah Highway and West Ashley. I know West Ashley is one of their focuses. We would like to work more closely with the South Carolina Department of Transportation, which owns most of the right-of-ways, particularly along the major arteries West Ashley, along Sam Rittenberg and along 61 and along Savannah Highway, particularly further out West Ashley on the Glenn McConnell Parkway. Those are public spaces, and they could be more beautiful, and we would like to work with those agencies to help. You know, the city is pretty really good with us about contributing to all these projects. Couldn't happen without the support of Mayor Riley, without the support of City Council, they actually put funds into these things, and we like to see the state government do the same thing to make those right-of-ways and those public spaces and those parts of the city look good. To your question about guerrilla gardening, the Charleston Parks Conservancy, we work in parks and we work in public spaces and in the public realm. But look, folks, when you take responsibility for creating beauty in your neighborhood or on your block or your street and making your community more beautiful and more livable and a place that people want to be, that's nothing but good.
Yeah.
There is nothing but good that can come from that.
Right.
So, you know, our city ordinance in the city of Charleston requires landowners to maintain the right-of-way that's adjacent to their property. So you can plant a tree or you can plant flowers in the right-of-way right now. And I think that's a wonderful thing for people to take. You're taking ownership of something that you already own. It's public space. You
right.
own it. You're a citizen. Go out there and make it beautiful. Work through us. We'd love to have you. Come be a park angel. You don't have to come out every week like some of our really dedicated people do. Come out once a month or come out in the summertime one time and just see what we do. That it's really about being engaged and involved in your community. Maybe you're not a gardener and you don't want to do that. We can have you help in the office or go volunteer for another organization. There are dozens of fantastic organizations in our city that do all kinds of great things. Maybe public space is not your thing like it is for me, but maybe it's reading to kids or it's helping at the food bank or at 180 Place. I mean, there's dozens of different things you can do to be involved
here. Absolutely. Well, you know, one of the things about that public realm space, and this is a question that I didn't give you beforehand, but one of the things that I read in the past year or so in terms of our research that's related to the If You Were Mayor space is the concept of resiliency and rain gardens that are actually in those public right-of-ways. And I don't know, I would love to see our next mayor sort of embrace some of that, because we've got an awful lot of places in the city that are sort of abutting areas that are prone to flooding, and there are some pretty aggressive, I guess you would call them aggressive pilot projects that would be kind of cool to do in those areas along the curbside or in the public right-of-way that could create some pretty interesting garden spaces that the Parks Conservancy, I would imagine, could really be a real partner in some of the sort of natural resiliency efforts.
Sure.
that could happen. And so whether that's a question or just a comment, it doesn't really matter. But I do think that's becoming, I mean, you know, when your street floods or your neighborhood has some flooding issues every couple of months that are like, wait a minute, where did that king tide come from?
Yeah.
I think we've really got to start investigating some of those things, because
no question about it. I mean, we all are aware of what's going on with the flooding. We were just talking about it before we went on the air here about the rain and how bad this fall has been with rain. But we also know that we've got sea levels are rising, and we live in the low country, and we live at a city that's along the water. And there are a lot of things that we need to be thinking about and planning for. And I think the kinds of things that you're talking about are a first step in getting us thinking about how we mitigate the impact of additional rain, if we're going to get it, if that's what the weather forecasters say we have coming our way, or certainly the sea levels are rising, and that's a whole other topic too.
Right.
But what we can do in our communities to help mitigate the impacts of these things.
I think we all have some educating to do of the engineering community. So,
absolutely.
You know, that if we can't go hardscaping everything that we
yeah, no question about it. And so, green is good. You know, green spaces are great. And so encouraging, you know, permeable surfaces and more plantings. You know, plants absorb water. So
that's right.
Anyway, I'm getting off topic.
The giant?
Here.
No, you're not. That's the giant sponge. So, I also don't want to miss the question. You're very active in the Art Fields program in.
Lake City,
in the Florence area, and I know that those efforts and you've worked with Darla Moore in some of that as well, and on there, I'm sure that you've learned a lot in that experience. And are you bringing some of that experience to bear on the Parks Conservancy?
Yes, it's an interesting sort of two-way communication that's going on with Ms. Moore and her involvement in Charleston and then her involvement in Lake City. Art Fields, for those of you who don't know, is a 10-day art festival in Lake City. Artists are invited from all over the Southeast to submit, and there is $100,000 in prize money for the winners of the various categories that they have created there. So it's really been a successful way, like Spoleto did here, back in the early 70s, mid-70s, I guess, when Spoleto started. But the idea was to use the arts, to use culture, to help revive your city. And it certainly worked in Charleston, Spoleto, and all the great things that happened there. And that's what's happening with Art Fields in Lake City. And Ms. Moore has really made an investment in Lake City, not just in Art Fields, but in infrastructure. I've been in many meetings with her where we discussed sewer and water issues and healthcare infrastructure and the whole range of municipal concerns when it comes to public safety. And so she's involved in all those things. And one of the reasons that she has me come there and work on these things is because of our experience in Charleston, because we've kind of done this here. And we've revived a downtown that was sort of on its last legs back, you know, 30 or 40 years ago. And we've used the arts and culture and have those work together, have the community work with the artists and the people who come to enjoy whatever their artists are creating to help improve the economy and to revive the city. And so that's what we've done here, and that's what she's working on there. And we want to do that at the Parks Conservancy with our parks. We're very interested in using public art to give people yet another reason to visit all of our wonderful parks around the city. We're working hard on this idea. We're out raising money for it right now. So I should say there's more to come there, but the idea is that we want to use temporary installations of public art in parks to encourage people not just to visit our parks, but to engage with artists and to learn more about all the great things that are happening in the art community. We're partnering with the Redux Contemporary Arts Center, with the city's cultural affairs office. So another partnership, another group of people that are interested in parks and public space that we want to give people another reason to come visit our great parks.
That's really exciting. Yeah. And I'm really excited to see all that come to fruition. I mean, we got a little glimpse. I think Enough Pie brought in the Art Fields
installations. The last winner. Year's winner.
And I know that they really got a really great response to that. So I'm sure that we're going to see more of those kinds of things come up.
And Enough Pie is another great group that we like working with, I should say. They're really doing wonderful things about bringing people together in the neck area of our city, and we're excited about working with them too.
Oh yeah, they're superb. They are really superb. In fact, we're very close to them right now.
Yes, we are.
As we close out our time, I don't know how we are on time, but as we close out our time, I know that you spent 8 years as the senior advisor to Joe Riley, and so you have an inside scoop on what really needs to happen within a mayoral, and we've touched on it today about how the local government can actually facilitate some of that engagement, and I suspect that that's why you are doing what you do, is you sort of took some of that experience sort of more, a little bit more boots on the ground. And I guess I'm going to put you on the spot about some advice that you might offer to our mayor-elect, John Tecklenburg, about really some of the lessons that he has a fairly affable personality, I think, is the word that I've seen in print a little bit, someone who I think has a broad spectrum of people that have supported him to date. I mean, from a lot of different walks of life, it's been kind of interesting to watch. So I'm going to ask you to give a little tidbit of advice for that next mayor.
Well, Whitney's put me on the spot here. I did have a great opportunity. While I've got the mic, I want to just say thank you to Mayor Riley, not just for what he's done for me personally, because I did have the opportunity to work on a day-to-day basis with him for 8 wonderful years, and it was a singular opportunity to work with a gifted public servant. But I want to thank him for what he did for our city and our community and our state, not just over the last year when his leadership has been critical to getting us through some pretty dark times, but over the last 40 years, and really longer than that. If all these remembrances lately don't talk about his work in the state legislature before he even became mayor, where he did a lot of important work, particularly on home rule, that allowed the city to have the authority to do many of the things that he actually did while he was mayor. So I want to thank Mayor Riley for not only what he did for the city, but what he's done for me personally, because it was an incredible opportunity. And he taught me many, many things that I use every day in my job. You know, we've talked about bringing people together. The thing that Mayor Riley had a quality of was listening. And that's what I would say to Mayor-elect Tecklenburg, my good friend John, who I've worked with for many years on lots of great projects. He's a civically involved, done lots of great things. I'm so happy for our community, and I think we're going to be just in fine hands. But be a listener. You know, as smart as Joe Riley is, and as much as he knew about cities, I mean, he was an incredible student of cities, studied them all over the world, and really made that his passion, was studying cities and building cities. Be a listener. And Joe Riley would do that. As much as he knew and had studied it, he would listen and really worked hard to understand what people were saying, because so many times people will say one thing, but they really mean something else.
Right.
You know, and he worked hard to understand people's hearts and what it is they really wanted. And maybe they were saying they wanted one thing. And you know, he caught a lot of flack over the years for sort of being out front on things and really making some bold stands. But he believed in his heart that what he was doing was what people wanted. And he leaves office here. And I've talked to people from the different campaigns about the polling they've done. You know, he leaves, his approval ratings are sky high. Any politician around America, around the world, would love to have his numbers. And
right.
And he did that because he listened and he cared. And so if there's one piece of advice I can say to John, is don't come in thinking that you already know everything. And John knows this because he's experienced too. But be a listener. Be open to new ideas. Many of the initiatives that Mayor Riley gets deserved credit for were not necessarily his idea.
Right.
You know, they were someone else's idea that he realized, hey, this is a great idea. This gets us, you know, where we need to be going. And he embraced that, made it his, took ownership, and worked his heart out to make those things happen. So be a listener. That's the first thing. And then the other thing I would say is be persistent. Don't give up when the first or second or third hurdle comes up and prevents you from achieving the right policy outcome. You got to be dogged and persistent.
Right.
Charleston Place took 10 years to build. The Waterfront Park took more than that. And there were lawsuits in front of every single one of those projects. You know, even the smaller scale things that Mayor Riley doesn't get as much credit for, things like building affordable housing, those things are extremely complicated. And the small projects can be just as complicated as the big ones.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and every one of them requires persistence and doggedness and determination to overcome every obstacle, be a problem solver, figure them out. But once you've listened to people and understand what they want, set the direction, get people on board, and then be dogged and persistent about
and believe in the future.
And believe in it. That's right.
Right.
And while you're listening, bring, you know, you got to go out and convince people and sell them that your ideas and where you're taking them is where they're actually saying that they want to go. So it's a great process, and I'm just excited about seeing a new mayor work with a great city council. We talk about our city council. We got a new mayor coming in. We got a couple of new council members,
right?
And a great council that's there now, that's experienced and has also worked with Mayor Riley. So it's an exciting time to be in Charleston. And for those of us like you and me, Whitney, who are sort of in the public sphere and work on civic issues, it's a real opportunity for us to have an impact and
right.
to keep our city focused on doing the right things and making this an even better place to live.
Well, I think that's incredibly sage advice. I will say that there was a Tecklenburg signed up at ifyouweremayor.com in late 2014. So so I think that they've been listening at least to this date to some of the things that have come up on our site, and we're really happy to sort of feel that that's been impactful in some fashion. So but just really, really, really want to thank you for coming in today.
Thank you, Whitney.
And obviously want to thank you for everything you do with the Parks Conservancy, and obviously you bring an enormous amount of experience and knowledge to the public realm that I think our next mayor is going to benefit from. And we look forward to some of the exciting things that you've mentioned already across the city. And I'm going to go take a look at Magnolia Garden.
You got to go see it.
But I promise I won't take something that does not belong to me.
There are public beds there. The community beds, you're welcome to pick a few things.
Okay. Well, thanks. And next week, tune in to Small Talks Big Ideas for your chance to hear from Low Country Local First. And thank you for tuning in to 96.3 FM Ohm Radio Charleston and supporting your local nonprofit radio station.
I've got to the bike, you can ride it if you like. It's got to the bus, it's a bell that rings and things.